Hello, I am Jay Bartleben, and this is number 0553, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0553. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber is back to talk about COVID-19 and mental health. For one thing, laughter could be the best medicine.
Laugh. Even if you have to fake laugh, you know how it's contagious? You start laughing, your kids start laughing, everything's funny at that point. Laughing increases your respiration, increases the pulse oxygen, the amount of oxygen you have in your body. It helps your body clean out its blood system through its lymphatic system, and it lowers your blood pressure. Those are all good things. It also releases dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, multiple other neurotransmitters that all help you think clearly and make you feel uplifted. So find something to laugh about.
We remember the late Lyle Waggoner, who was best remembered from Wonder Woman and, of course, The Carol Burnett Show, which he left after 8 years.
I knew the show couldn't last forever, like every television show gets canceled eventually, and they had never syndicated a variety show. And I said, boy, well, you know, once this goes off the air, I'll have nothing, so I better look for something that's got possibilities in syndication. So after Wonder Woman people came, offered me this position, and I said, okay, let me do that. Well, as it turned out, the Burnett Show was one of the most successful syndicated shows in the history of television, to show you what my foresight is like. Burnett Show was the most fun of all. The rehearsals were absolutely hysterical, and if they could have videoed those and shown them on HBO, that would have been a successful show too, but he couldn't show it on a family channel.
Farooq Tahid is the host of the new NBC Saturday morning show called Roots Less Traveled, which delves into family trees.
This is a show that's in the EI platform, so the educational, informational genre, where we really, really focus on the kids, and this age range is generally probably, I would say, between like 12 and 16. Definitely trying to get the younger audience involved in knowing their history and knowing their ancestry and knowing where they came from. It can really provide a lot of information, and this show is going to show exactly how that's going to happen.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0553 was Jay Bartleben, the grand poobah at cyberstationusa.com, located in the greater New England area, and it's one of the many, many homes of the Stuff File Program. Thank you very much, Jay, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Oregon police are begging residents not to call 911 over a coronavirus-related toilet paper shortage. It's hard to believe that we even have to do this or post this, writes the Newport, Oregon Police Department. Do not call 911 just because you ran out of toilet paper. You will survive without our assistance. The Coastal City's Police Department also suggests alternatives for bathroom tissue, including grocery receipts, newspaper, cloth rags, lace, cotton balls, and even that empty toilet paper roll sitting on the holder right now. Well, while one might see the humor in the police department's suggestions for alternatives, do we really want to deal with the people who will, after using newspaper, cloth rags, lace, or an empty toilet paper roll, deal with the overabundance of clogged toilets all over the state? You know they're going to try to flush this stuff down, don't you? I mean, seriously. Some people will do whatever you tell them to. Meanwhile, during the COVID-19 crisis, some people in Japan have resorted to pilfering toilet paper from public restrooms when the rolls become unavailable in stores. One convenience store worker put the power of the supernatural to work against such thieves. Mink Itachibe, who works at a store in the Niigata Prefecture, hung signs with images of eyes and kanji characters in front of the toilet paper to curse the tempting rolls. "I did it as a joke, but it seems to have worked," she said. "The symbols imply that if someone nips TP from the store, a hungry monster will hunt them down and gobble them up." "People can be quite superstitious in Japan," Itachibe said. Yeah. Cue screaming Jay Hawkins.
"I put a spell on you. Because you're mad."
The Deerfield, Michigan American Legion has been forced by COVID-19 restrictions to cancel its annual testicle eating festival, which was to take place on March 21st. The big event, which draws 2,000 locals and visitors to Deerfield every year, offers deep-fried bull genitals, also known as mountain oysters, and chicken gizzards. According to organizer Nick Pulver, "So many people look forward to coming to Deerfield during this time of year, but I think we made the best decision to delay it." Organizers hope to postpone it to May the 9th. Meanwhile, the 300 pounds of delectables that were ordered for the festival have been frozen. So, they'll still have the balls to do it in May, huh? Yeah. Actually, the trick to really being gutsy is trying to eat bull testicles while they're still on the bowl.
"You know what? I can't deal with this anymore. Just kill all the Peters. Any Peter, just kill him."
Well, that seems a little harsh. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, and it is a related topic. With the pandemic, that is COVID-19, the world is being asked to change dramatically the way they live. Terms like social distancing are becoming part of our regular vernacular. So what does quarantining and voluntary isolation, not to mention the worry over the virus, do to one's mental health? We put that question to Dr. John Huber. He's a clinical forensic psychologist and the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization. He joins us once again on the line from Texas. Hi, John.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. At press time, as we are recording this, I understand you just flew back from Seattle to your home base of Texas. And as we all know, the state of Washington is the state that's been hit the hardest as far as deaths have been concerned. So first I got to ask you, how's your mental health?
Oh, it's doing pretty good. I got to see firsthand what's going on there in Seattle and the surrounding communities. And I was actually quite impressed. There's a big paranoia there. I mean, you know, the big corporations like Amazon, like that, they're digital. So for the most part, they have told their employees to work from home. And that's something like 40, 50,000 people that are no longer working downtown because they're able to work from home. But at the same time, there's a whole huge force of people that, you know, don't have that luxury and are just out of jobs. I mean, while we were at the hotel we were staying at, they were so thankful we were there because they got to keep their job for another week. And we were getting thanked left and right. It was, it was a nice Marriott, one of their modes. And, you know, they have several different types. But, man, it was like I was staying at the Crown Plaza because everybody was, "Let me help you with that. Please, thank you." And, you know, and they had floors completely blocked off. And I understand why. I mean, there's just no traffic. The airports were empty. It was really kind of disheartening. I mean, they were still flying, and you know, our plane probably had 100 empty seats in it out of 200, so it was about half full, going and coming. Other than that, I went into the grocery stores. There was food there. There was bread. There was toilet paper. Then we went to communities outside of the main metropolis. Man, you want to talk about people everywhere, bustling. You know, the restaurants were active. People were moving around. Even though it's, you know, the wintertime and it's not tourist season, it was very busy. It was almost like the beginning of the tourist season.
Again, you were coming back from Seattle, coming back from the state of Washington, in a pressurized tube flying back to Texas. Was there any concern of that, considering that I'm sure some of the people who were coming on the flight with you were probably Washingtonians? And again, that's a state that's going through a lot.
Right. And, you know, I just got back from New York, too. And while I was there, they got their first numbers diagnosed with the coronavirus while I was there. What I noticed was that on the plane, what should have happened happened. The people who were sick wore masks. There was only one or two people. If you're not sick, you should not wear the masks, because the masks actually increase the frequency of you touching your face, which is how this communicable disease, this community-based infectious disease, transmits itself. It's not airborne. It's not, you know, like you cough and this dry virus floats in the air like it does, for example, with tuberculosis. It has to have a water droplet to carry it. So it needs to, you know, be carried in a cough. And what we see is, you know, if you're sneezing, that's not one of the symptoms. You're sneezing with the coronavirus. You don't have coronavirus. You've got something else.
Okay, well, let's talk about the, you know, the issue that we have you on for today, and that's the psychological aspect of it. We are now in a situation where there's social distancing, there is a quarantining, there is voluntary isolation, and the social distancing and the voluntary isolation, that has effects on certain people when it comes to their own mental health, because by nature we are social creatures.
Absolutely. And it's pretty scary. I mean, I went to my mailbox this morning and the neighbor stood like 20 feet away from me. And normally if somebody walks up to you, shake hands, talk, and knew it was, you know, oh, stay away kind of mentality. And it was scary. And then I went to the grocery store and, you know, I'm not stressed out about it. I'm like, okay, you know, I mean, I just got through from the epicenter here in the United States of the coronavirus, and I think I'm doing pretty good. I'm not sick. I'm washing my hands like I do in the hospital with much more serious diseases than the coronavirus, by the way. And I go in the grocery store and the shelves, you know, there used to be 40 types of bread. Now there's two. And it's the $8 loaf of bread. And there's two of those. And, you know, it's just like, wow, what is next? And I go down the aisle and, whoa, there's no chicken. Whoa, there's no vegetables. What is going on? And it's paranoia.
Well, when it comes to the mental health issue, the thing that, although adults have to deal with this, the thing I'm more concerned with is we're in a situation now where schools are being closed, daycare centers are being closed, children are at home, and children get their cues of how to deal with stress from the adults around them, from their parents, from their grandparents, so on and so forth. What do you tell a child to comfort him or her when you're going through this situation, especially if they, for instance, can't go and see grandma and grandpa because of their age?
Well, right. And those are the people that are most at risk, are the elderly, the debilitated, and immune deficiency people. You know, if you have diabetes, you're at risk. If you have an organ transplant, you're on immunosuppressant drugs. It makes you at risk. You are the people we're worried about. In fact, if you take those people out, the infectious, you know, the morbidity of this disease is very much like the flu. But you add those people back in, and we're pushing that 1-2%. And then there's really crazy stuff about that. I can talk to my kids all day about that. Look at some of these other countries out there that are having really flu-like mortality rates. How are they able to do that, yet we're pushing 2%, and China pushed 2%? How were they? Why? Well, there's interesting things about our biology, and so I talk to my kids about that, and I think parents should be informed. You know, a high-sugar diet actually creates an ecosystem within your body that is favorable for viruses. So processed foods, high-sugar foods are not a good thing for you for multiple reasons, but one of them is it creates an atmosphere, an environment that's inviting and increases the survivability rate of these viruses.
So what do you tell parents who want to alleviate the fears of their kids, or what do you tell parents so that they don't, by their own actions, increase the stress level of their kids?
Well, you just went to where I was going. And, you know, you can tell your kids everything all day long. They hear what you do, not what you say. So you have to make sure you're acting in a sane, goal-directed process with everything. Don't panic. Okay. You know, and that was internally when I walked in the grocery store and I saw these bare shelves. I got this, wow, are we in Venezuela? And I have an associate in Venezuela right now. And they're like, you got to help me get out of here. What can I do? There's nothing on the shelves. You know, there's nothing. And, you know, I'll go 2 days without eating anything solid. You know, I walked into that and it was pretty scary for a moment. And then I realized, wait a minute, what is available? Go to the farmers markets, go to the marketplaces, the H-Marts, things like that, the non-traditional HEB or grocery store chains, and they have food. Okay. You know, and it's really interesting to go see that. So don't panic, be calm, explain to your children why you're calm. Okay. You know, there are food delivery trucks out there. I mean, literally I walked by, there was no milk. I walked down the other end of the grocery store. I came back by and they'd already unloaded milk and there was milk on the shelves. Because the process is still there. People are just buying 10 times what they actually need. So calm down, take what you need, leave the rest, because the debilitated, the elderly, it creates some serious hardships for them. They can't move around like we can. And if you take 10 gallons of milk when you only need one, that elderly couple is going to be without it. So you need to behave under control. I'm not going to tell you to not be fearful and not to be concerned, because we need to be. We need to be concerned all the time, as a matter of fact, because during the same time that we've lost about 6,500, 7,000 people worldwide to the coronavirus, just in the United States alone, we've lost 24,000 people to the flu. So we should be cautious like this all of the time to keep from making other people sick and to keep our family members healthy. The other thing I expect my parents to do with my kids and their kids when I'm working with them is get out. Side. Even if it's cold, bundle up and go for a walk. You know, go down to the park, get outside. We know UV light is not a good thing for most viruses. So it's advantageous for you to get outside where those viruses have a harder time surviving and you don't get depressed. Even if it's cloudy and rainy, you don't get depressed like you do curled up under a blanket on your couch for 4 days. Get outside. Try and exercise. Laugh. Even if you have to fake laugh, you know how it's contagious. You start laughing, your kids start laughing, and everything's funny at that point. Well, laughing increases your respiration, increases the pulse oxygen, the amount of oxygen you have in your body. It helps your body clean out its blood system through its lymphatic system, and it lowers your blood pressure. Those are all good things. It also releases dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, multiple other neurotransmitters that all help you think clearly and make you feel uplifted. So find something to laugh about. Now's the time to pull out those games that, you know, you don't really have time for the rest of the time. And maybe, you know, we do a little off-color ones. Cards Against Humanity is great with teenagers because half the time they're afraid to even read the cards in front of you. listening to them, we do an extra thing. We usually try and get a couple helium tanks for like birthday parties, and you have to read the cards out on the helium. You get laughing, and that's one of the best things you can possibly do in a situation like this is laugh, laugh, laugh.
Good fun advice. I thank you very much, John, for being on the program with us. Stay safe, sir.
Definitely, and you know, if it gets bad here, I'm going to come visit you, so.
Thank you very much, John.
Thank you. Have an amazing day.
Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0553, and you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we will remember Lyle Waggoner, who, of course, was on The Carol Burnett Show and also Wonder Woman. And we'll meet the host of a new NBC show for Saturday mornings called Roots Less Traveled. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way as well, and more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. We just have a couple of Stuff File news stories, a shortened version, so that we can spend more time hearing what Lyle Waggoner had to say in an interview we did back in 1999. So let's get to those two Stuff File stories I want to share with you right here, right now. 23-year-old Cody Hicks was reportedly driving erratically and crashed into another car on March 13th in Manatee County, Florida. Then it got weird. What he did next perplexed the two young women in the car and also onlookers. According to the Manatee County Sheriff's Office, Hicks emerged from his vehicle, pulled down his pants and underwear, and fondled himself while sticking out his tongue at witnesses. Deputies said Hicks would only tell them, "I want my lawyer." He was arrested for a lewd and lascivious exhibition and entered a plea of not guilty. Well, thank goodness shaking hands is now passé. Gee, during the trial that's upcoming, I wonder if the evidence, you know, will stand up in court. Yeah. And finally, police in Las Cruces, New Mexico, who approached a woman driving a stolen car on March 7th, were surprised when she identified herself as pop singer Beyoncé Knowles. Officers had to use fingerprint scanners to properly identify 48-year-old Serena Henry. Henry at first ignored police when they tried to pull her over, but they followed her to her home, where she got out of the car but refused to give them her name. She was charged with stealing the vehicle, concealing her identity, and resisting arrest. She's not Beyoncé, or even from her previous girl group. Maybe she took the title of a Destiny's Child hit too much to heart.
Say my name, say my name.
Actually, her destiny is only to be behind bars. Anyway, let's get to our next segment here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actor Lyle Waggoner, who is probably best known for his 8 years on The Carol Burnett Show, followed by his regular role as Major Steve Trevor on Wonder Woman, has died at the age of 84. While he was known for all of the work he did in front of the camera, his true success and his wealth came from the business he started in 1979. It was Star Wagons, a company that leases customized location trailers for use by the entertainment industry. I had a chance to catch up with Lyle back in April of 1999, which gave us a chance to talk about his business and his previous career on our television screens. Here's part of that conversation now. You have not necessarily been on television a lot of late, but you've been keeping very, very busy.
Been very busy in a peripheral effort. I'm still in the entertainment field, but behind the camera. We have a company called Star Wagons, and we build and supply the industry with all of the dressing trailers, makeup trailers, and wardrobe trailers that they use on location.
Now, you've turned this into, it's quite a business for yourself, but if I'm not mistaken, I understand this initially started as a tax shelter?
Yes, actually. When I was doing the show...
So you can say that. The IRS isn't listening to this show. We're in Canada, so you don't have to worry about that.
No. When I was doing the show Wonder Woman, you remember that? Did you get that in Canada?
Oh, yes.
I was doing the show with Linda Carter. If you saw the show, you'd probably know what she looks like.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to work the first few days, and our dressing rooms were right next to each other. I discovered there's a little hole in the wall there. You could see right through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose I should have patched it up right away, but I figured, what the heck, let her look if she wants to. So a few weeks later, they decided they were going to do a lot of location shots, and so they got us both motorhomes. And I was very impressed because it had to be $35,000 or $40,000 worth of equipment. And I said, the company buy this for me to use? They said, no, we rent it from some individual in the valley. And I said, well, if I had one, would you rent it for me? They said, well, of course. Your contract says you get a motorhome, so then say where we have to get it. So I went out and ordered one. And when it came in, we sent this other fellow back. And they rented that coach from me for the 3 years that I was on that show. And during that time, I discovered there was no company, no organization that had a fleet of this equipment available to the studios. Whenever they needed one or two or three, they had to go out to one or two or three people. So I told them that if they wanted new motorhomes to call me, I would go out and buy them for them and supply them with brand new ones. It wasn't that I was wealthy. It was just that in those days, we had what they called an investment tax credit here in the United States, where if you had a business and you bought equipment for that business, you would get a 10% investment tax credit right off of your income tax. So I figured if I bought enough of these motorhomes, I would pay no taxes. And that's pretty much what happened. But eventually, in 1986, our government, in all of its wisdom, decided that this was not a good deal and canceled the whole thing. But by that time, I was pretty well established, and we could continue on and grow the business as we have for 20 years now.
It seems ironic that you start a business with something that basically is a necessity in the Hollywood community, but no one else thought of doing that.
It is ironic. I never could figure it out to this day why somebody, certainly in the transportation department, wouldn't put together a fleet of motorhomes or trailers or vehicles of some kind and make them available for rent. But they didn't, and I saw that void and was lucky enough to go ahead and follow it through. Now we have a fleet of about 300 of these trailers, and we have a little plant in Sylmar, California, where we build them as fast as we can, which isn't that fast. It's about 30 or 40 a year because they're very complicated, very sophisticated. But we've got quite a niche here that we are filling.
Do you have any competition these days? I mean, before when you started, there was nobody else.
No, there wasn't. And we have other suppliers, but I don't consider them competition because they don't have a plant. They don't build their own. They buy travel trailers and convert them, and in most cases simply take our overflow, which is a pretty good position to be in.
As I mentioned right off the top, Carol Burnett's show has found a new life here in Canada on the Comedy Network, and that's big news because it's been a few years since we've seen the repeats when they first stripped it down as Carol and Friends a couple of years ago.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That means there might be a residual or two coming through. I might be able to get my couch recovered this year.
You were on that show for all of the 11 years, right?
No, I was on it for 8 years, and then I knew the show couldn't last forever, like every television show gets canceled eventually, and they had never syndicated a variety show. And I said, boy, once this goes off the air, I'll have nothing, so I better look for something that's got possibilities in syndication. So the Wonder Woman people came, offered me this position, and I said, okay, let me do that. Well, as it turned out, the Burnett Show was one of the most successful syndicated shows in the history of television, to show you what my foresight is like. Burnett Show was the most fun of all.
Mm-hmm.
The rehearsals were absolutely hysterical, and if they could have videoed those and shown them on HBO, that would have been a successful show too, but he couldn't show it on a family channel.
Now, what was it like after 8 years on a successful show when you suddenly walked into the offices and said, hey folks, it's been wonderful, but I'm leaving?
It wasn't fun, but I thought at the time that it was a practical move to make. And Harvey did the same thing a couple of years later. They made a few changes during the final years of the Burnett Show. It worked out well for me because if I hadn't have left the show, I wouldn't have discovered this business. And this business is really, really what I wanted. So fate works in strange ways.
How did fate find you in the first place to be on the Carol Burnett Show?
I was under contract out at 20th Century Fox in what they called their new talent group. And there was a bunch of young actors and actresses that the studios felt had some potential, and they would pay them to come and go to their classes at the studio lot. And whenever possible, they would put them in small parts in features or television so that they could get some practical experience. By the way, in that class, we had Christina Ferrari. Do you know who that is?
Yes.
Okay, with James Brolin was in that class, Tom Selleck, Sam Elliott. So there were some pretty good people that came out of that Fox class. Anyway, I was there for about a year, and my agent called me and said that CBS was interviewing actors to play the part of the announcer on, at that time, the new Carol Burnett show, and I should go on an interview for it. So I did, and when I went over to the CBS buildings and went up the elevator as I was directed, I was met at the elevator by Joe Hamilton's secretary. He was Carol's husband and also the producer of the show.
Was that Charlene Beatty?
Charlene, how do you know her?
I do my homework.
Well, you do indeed. Anyway, Charlene ushered me through the offices past the other secretaries and into Joe's office, where I interviewed for a few minutes and apparently made a good, favorable impression, but and then left back through the offices, down the elevator, and on home. I found out later that once I left, the Joe and Arnie Rosen, the head writer, would come out into the office and say, "Well, girls, what'd you think of that guy?" And they were the ones who gave us the thumbs up or thumbs down, and apparently they liked me. And I came back for another interview with Carol, and we hit it off, and I got the job.
So basically, if you were missing teeth and had a hump, you wouldn't have a chance.
Yes, exactly. No, they were looking for a guy to play the announcer for Carol to bounce jokes off of, the handsome announcer. Who can't speak very well, as you know. And she built quite an image for me over those years. In fact, even today I get recognized. And I would say I sign maybe 10 or 12 autographs a day. Nobody ever asked for them. I just like keep in practice, you know what I mean.
Now, after the Burnett Show, as you mentioned, you went to Wonder Woman and you found this business.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still step out in front of the cameras?
Very rarely. I've pretty much lost interest in that. I don't enjoy the interviews, but I try and get, you know, a show or two a year, an episodic show, so that I can earn enough money to keep my medical insurance active. And when I am on the set, it really is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun being in camera, but I also am reminded about all the time that you have to spend in the dressing room and waiting around and the long, long hours, and it really is boring. But when you're on the set and you're doing the acting, that's a kick.
As a young actor who was working on such a variety show, one of the things that made a variety show great was not just the sketches, not just the songs, but you also had guest stars.
Yes.
What was that like for you, being in the business, meeting some of the guest stars who happened to be on that show? I remember the episode when Lana Turner was on. I just thought that was so neat.
Oh, I tell you, Peter, it was amazing. When I look back and think of the people that I had an opportunity to rub shoulders with and anything else, too. But, yeah, I remember Lana Turner on there, but I did sketches with Bob Hope and Bing Crosby and some legends in the industry. I think, who was it, Steve and Edie Gourmet, Steve?
Lawrence.
He was one of the best sketch actors we ever had on there. In fact, Tim Conway came on as a sketch actor, and he was so good they signed him. Steve, of course, had another gig, and they probably would have signed him too, but he was terrific.
Do you ever get in contact with the old gang?
Not very often, but when we do, it's always a pleasant experience. We had just a great time on the show. I'll see Carol and Vicky and Tim from time to time at the industry events and charity events, but it's certainly not as often as I'd like.
Every once in a while, you see things on television. They always have these quote-unquote reunion shows.
Yes, we did one.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that?
Which year did you do one?
We did it about 3 years ago. It was the 25th anniversary reunion, and we got the whole gang back together. I hadn't seen some of these people, like the stagehands and some of the cameramen, for 15, 17, 18, maybe 20 years. And when you go back for the reunion and you see these people, it's a little bit of a shock because you see a lot of gray hairs and pot bellies and wrinkles and so on. But their voices hadn't changed and their sense of humor hadn't changed. And after you're with them for maybe 15, 20 minutes, it's like we'd been off for a couple of weeks and coming back to do another show.
Now, when you did that, did you kind of miss it? Like when it was all over, did you think, you know, maybe we could do this again?
No. Nope, I didn't. I enjoyed it while we were there, but I didn't want to do it again. I was anxious to get back to my business, which is, I only go in about 2 hours a day and then play a lot of golf and have a good time.
So it's like a high school reunion. You're glad to go back and meet everyone, but you don't want to go back to high school.
Exactly.
We're talking to actor Lyle Waggoner, who is actually a businessman these days. He owns a company called Star Wagons, supplying, well, those big trailers for, I guess, television and film. Is that the deal, basically?
Well, anybody in the industry. We supply all the trailers on ER and Diagnosis Murder and Charmed and X-Files and Everybody Loves Raymond, Deep Space Nine, and about 36 or 7 other television series, not to mention all of the movie stars like Pierce Brosnan and Jim Carrey, Kevin Costner, Robert Redford. Goes on down to even Steven Spielberg was in one of the trailers not long ago, and he didn't have a very big one, and matter of fact, his request was that all the mirrors in the trailer be covered. Don't know why. Maybe it's because he's a hard worker and he just didn't want to be distracted by mirrors.
Hmm.
Bill Clinton was in one. He had one day thing out at Universal Studios. We had to deliver the trailer 2 days in advance so that the Secret Service could come in there and look for Monica, but they'd never find her. Tom Hanks uses them, George Clooney, and I think every major star and not so major stars have been in Star Wagons. Yeah, thank heaven.
So what's it like to go from being an actor to being the boss?
I like being boss. Boss is good. I worked hard, you know, to start the business. In fact, you know, when I started it, I was, a nationally known television personality, and here I was out in a gravel lot scrubbing tires and cleaning out toilets of these motorhomes so I could start this business. And I did that kind of work for a long time until it kind of took off, and I was able to hire people to do that kind of thing. We have about 50 employees now, and it gives me time to take off and relax.
Now, you say you don't act very much anymore these days.
Correct.
But please don't tell me that voice is going to waste.
Well, I'm afraid so.
Oh, come on.
You call it going to waste.
Well, you know, in this business where there are so many voiceover artists out there.
Oh, yes, but they are artists, too. They're really good. That is such a competitive field, as you probably already know. And they have a lot more talent than I do.
Well, I think you're selling yourself short, sir.
Well, maybe. I'll go out and get my agent and say, let's cut a demo tape.
Lyle, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us this evening.
You're welcome. Thanks for
having
me.
And it's very interesting to hear that you have been even more successful in your own life as a businessman with your company, Star Wagons. Continued success.
I feel very fortunate. Thank you, Peter.
That was a conversation with the very funny and very humble Lyle Waggoner. Lyle died on March 17th at the age of 84. He was a classy gentleman who had a good head for business and was even more successful out of the limelight than he was coming into our homes regularly via our televisions. Lyle is survived by his wife, Sharon Kennedy, and his two sons, Jason and Beau. He will be missed. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, where we share the longest unprotected border in the world with the United States. Take that as a sign of extreme friendship or a warning.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the new NBC television series, Routes Less Traveled. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a Louisiana woman was just trying to do a favor and post bond for an inmate locked up on drug charges, but her generosity landed her in jail too. 33-year-old Stormy Lynn Parfait. Oh, that can't be her real name. I mean, what would her porn name be? Anyway, Stormy Lynn Parfait was arrested after presenting $5,000 in cash at the Ashland jail that allegedly had an overwhelming odor of marijuana. Not the jail, the $5,000 in cash. A detective followed Parfait to her vehicle after she posted bond and allegedly found $39,868 in cash, along with 96 Clonopin pills and a food stamp card that wasn't hers. Police then obtained a warrant for her home and allegedly found 4 unattended children, 2 more Clonopin pills, 704 tizanidine pills, marijuana, cocaine, 25 THC pins, a promethazine bottle, digital scales, packing equipment, and $945 in cash. Parfait was charged with numerous drug-related offenses. Wow. There are pharmacies that aren't as equipped as this woman. I bet the cops are kinda curious to see what kind of miscreant is going to try and bail her out. I can just imagine the laundry list of crimes that person might have. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Farouk Tahid is the host of the new NBC series Routes Less Traveled. The show is produced by Ancestry, and it follows two family members searching for information and historical facts about family and relatives long since passed. Farouk joins us via Skype from California. Hi, Farouk.
Hey, what's happening, guys? How you doing? Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Pleasure to have you on. People might know you from the series Battle Bots, where you're the ring announcer. So this is a new direction for you. And this is something that is that a lot of people are into. I'm sure many of our audience are aware of shows like Finding Your Roots on PBS and the interest in people looking back at their ancestry. So tell us how you came to this show.
It's crazy, Peter. It really is one of them things where the show kind of came to me. I've been doing some work and had been out there auditioning and doing a lot of interviews and meetings and things like that. And it's just happened to be one of those gigs where, you know, they say you don't know what's happening behind the doors. And this was one of those things where, like, they were looking for a show for me for a year between the casting director and Litton. And this just happened to be the show that landed on. I mean, look, with somebody with a little bit of emotional compass. And, I tend to be very involved. It can shed a tear when the emotions strike very well. And this is definitely one of those shows where get your tissues ready.
Now, this show, as I said, is on NBC. It's going to be airing on Saturday mornings, right?
Right. NBC Saturday mornings beginning April 4th.
So is this a show that is geared toward a younger audience?
Yeah, so this is a show that's in the EI platform, so the educational informational genre, where we really focus on the kids, and this age range is generally probably, I would say, between like 12 and 16. Definitely trying to get the younger audience involved in knowing their history and knowing their ancestry and knowing where they came from. It can really provide a lot of information, and this show is going to show exactly how that's going to happen.
So I mentioned earlier that it follows two families searching for information about their relatives and their past. Can you tell us a little bit more about how the show is going to evolve, what we're going to see when it premieres on the 4th of April?
Absolutely. So my job, you know, is definitely as a host, but even more than a host, I like to look at it like I'm more of a guide. I'm taking them on a genealogical treasure hunt. And so we meet two family members who may have not seen each other for a little bit or don't get to spend as much time as they like together. We bring them together, introduce them to some of their family tree and help fill their family tree out. And as well, we also try to battle some of the myths and legends that we all have in our families, right? Like, you know, for instance, one family member, they hear that they had a relative that was on the Titanic. And so we dive into that and we take that travel down that road to find out if it's true or not. And also, you know, travel to where the family's lineage began or where it came from, you know, the longest storylines here in America. So we've traveled all over from Montana to Brooklyn to Nashville to Mexico to Cuba in this first season. And it's going to be definitely an amazing journey for everybody involved, especially our viewers.
I know when people watch shows like this, they can't help but think about their own ancestry. You as the host or as the guide, as you say, what did you think about for your own roots in taking this journey with other people on the show?
You know, it really sparked an interest in me really diving into my own ancestry and my own family tree and my own just my own ancestry just all together, because, you know, I'm with these families and, you know, it's their journey, but I'm with them too. And so I'm along and going along this emotional ride, and some things I don't know as well that we discover and we find out. So for me, you know, it really sparked an interest in learning about my family history, because one of the things that I found for me in doing this show is that knowing where you came from, knowing your ancestry, knowing, you know, who your relatives were, your ancestors were, you know, going back hundreds of years, it can really fuel you today and give you some answers as to why you chose the career you chose. Or even more importantly, like one of the things that did for me is that gave me purpose, because you realize the backs of the people that you're standing on to help you get to where you are today. And that can really propel you forward. And that's what this show did for me.
Now, do you come from a large family?
I do come from a large family. You know, it's definitely dwindled down. You know, my grandmother, she was one of seven or eight. My father was also one of seven or eight. So, you know, even though I grew up, you know, on separate sides, my dad's side and my mom's side, you know, even when we got together, it was always, you know, Thanksgivings, holidays, you know how it is. You know, it's 30, 40, 50 people in the house at one time sometimes. And I'm only talking about a house that's only 2-3 bedrooms, probably only 1,400 square feet. We're not talking about mansions here. So, yeah, so I come from a big family. And, you know, family to me is everything. I'm kind of out here by myself in California right now. My family's back in Philly where I grew up. But I try to stay in contact, and definitely social media has helped me with all that.
The reason why I asked that point is because I have a prediction for you of what's going to happen once this show airs.
Okay.
What's going to happen is your family and friends are all going to watch the show because, you know, you're family.
Okay,
And they're going to get sucked into the whole concept of what's going on, and you're going to start getting phone calls, emails, and messages from members of your family who are going to tell you little nuggets about your family that you don't know.
Listen, I hope your prediction comes true.
Yeah.
Because that prediction right there will help me out so much. I run into a wall in researching my own ancestry, you know, with even just trying to figure out my grandmother's name on her birth certificate. So I hope all the stories come out, just like you're saying there, Peter. I hope it all comes out and they flood me with information. Hopefully not too much, because, you know, I will block somebody every now and again.
Because I know when people watch shows like this, it does get people talking, just generally. Absolutely. And you are the host, so your family's going to watch, and they're going to say, "Well, you know, there's this great uncle that you've got that, or whatever, or you know that you didn't know about." Yeah,
Right, but that's what happens in all of our families, right? You hear these stories, these myths, these legends that get passed down through generations, and that's one of the great things that this show does is it takes some of these myths, these legends, and we really help to say, okay, look, this really did happen in your family, and this did not. We had one family, our Nashville story, where you know they originally thought that their family was related to the Ford family, Henry T. Ford, that built the Model T, the first car. And, you know, on our show, we're going to also dive into that and, you know, help them discover if that's real or not. So it's a lot of stories out there that we get in our family. So this is the kind of show, if you have those stories, we can help you out.
Is it also the kind of show that you'll need to watch it with a box of Kleenex handy?
You know, if you're that type of person, you know, if you watch Toy Story 3 and you might have shed a tear, or, you know, Stepmom is one of those movies where you might shed a tear. If you're known to shed a tear at a episode of, you know, any of the great shows out there, you know, your emotional compass. Have the tissues ready, because I know I definitely had mine in my back pocket as I was hosting the thing. So it was great.
Duly noted. The show premieres on April the 4th. How many episodes are you doing?
We got about 8 episodes coming at you. Like I said, kicking off April 4th here, Saturday on NBC. And it's going to be a good ride.
And I know this is different, but I'll ask the difference. How different is this for you from doing something like BattleBots?
Completely. No, it's completely different. But that's one of the things that I've been blessed with, just in my career so far, is I've been able to host a kids game show. I've been able to host a robot fighting competition. I've been involved in esports and video games for most of my career, and now being able to come to something that's definitely more real and more family oriented. You know, one of the crazy things that happened to me is I want to say a week before I got the call about this show, I've been searching for my own purpose. And one of the things that I told my wife, I said, you know what, I think I've discovered my purpose. And it's for the family. And that's for me to do content and do shows that's for families. And then a week later, I got the call about this show. So it's just funny how things work out. So this is definitely a big time family show. It's something for everybody. So get your Kleenexes ready.
And we would be remiss to not mention the fact that you're also, in addition to a host and an announcer, you're an actor as well. You've done shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, NCIS, The Shield. The list goes on and on. So this is a different direction for you. Which do you enjoy more, the reality type situations you work on, or the scripted dramatic things that you've worked on, or comedic things that you've worked on?
You know, all of it is a passion of mine. You know, when I moved to L.A. Some years ago, I came out here to be an on-camera actor. Like, that was my thing. You know, I wanted to do TV and film. But through the time, I was able to add hosting, and I was able to add voiceovers. I also do voiceovers for cartoons. I've done stuff for We Bare Bears and video games like, you know, BioShock Infinite series, Mass Effect 3, all that good stuff. So, you know, for me, it's really all about just working and doing what I love. As long as I have a passion for it and I'm doing what I love, I wouldn't care if I was hosting TV, on camera, off camera, as far as like, you know, doing voiceover stuff. As long as I'm working in this industry as an actor or a talent in any way, shape, or form, I'm a happy man.
Well, we're all happy that you got this new gig. We're looking forward to it. Again, the show is Roots Less Travel that airs on NBC starting April 4th. Farouk, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much to all the Stuff Files listeners and you, Peter Anthony. I really appreciate you. I just got one question for you. Are you going to have a box of tissues handy on April 4th?
Oh, no? Yes.
Okay. All right. We're good then.
Yes, indeed. That's Farouk Tahid, host of Roots Less Traveled on NBC. The show premieres on Saturday, April the 4th. Check your local listings. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's that time you've all been waiting for, boys and girls. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
This is a first for the Stuff File program. Not only is The Idiot an actual collective, it's also in audio clip form. At this time, when the entire world is literally shutting down, there is a special class of people.
With the coronavirus, life has changed. Annual conferences have been canceled. Broadway is shut down. The religious pilgrimage to Mecca has been curtailed. Every sports league has ceased operations. The Pope doesn't speak on the balcony overlooking St. Peter's Square anymore. You get the gist. We're dealing with a pandemic. But teenagers still insist on flocking to Florida, following the bacchanal trend innocently depicted by Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello in Beach Blanket Bingo. After all, these kids are immune. They don't care about their parents, their grandparents, or neighbors when they return back home.
If I get corona, I get corona. At the end of the day, I'm not going to let it stop me from partying.
Like, it's really messing up with my spring break. What is there to do here other than go to the bars or the beach, and they're closing all of it? It's really messing up. I think they're blowing it way out of proportion. I think it's doing way too much.
We've been waiting for Miami spring break for a while. About 2 months we've had this trip planned. 2-3 months. We're just out here having a good time. Whatever happens, happens.
This virus ain't that serious. It's more serious things out there like hunger and poverty. We need to address that.
I just turned 21 this year, so I'm here to party, so it's kind of disappointing. But we're just making the most of it. We met these other people in our little Airbnb spot, so we're just hanging out with them and trying to get drunk before everything closes.
I swear, the beaches of Florida might have a bigger death toll than the beaches of Normandy. I'll leave the last word to two more brain-dead FOMO followers.
Most of the people who are out here, they don't know that if they are sick, they wouldn't know yet. So we're not too worried. It is a virus that doesn't really affect, like, you know, our age group. So we're not really worried about it. Even if we do get it, it won't, you know, kill us or anything. We'll just get sick. So I feel like it's a worthy trade-off to come to the beach. You know, if we do get sick, then it's not that big of a deal. But I understand how it is a big deal for some people, especially older people.
Yeah. I see the argument that a lot of the young people coming out here are ignorant, because people are saying they're going to go home and give it to grandma or grandpa. I'm going to go home and go back to my apartment and probably be around nobody and not give it to grandma or grandpa. So that argument works for some people. I mean, it depends on the situation.
Hey, listen, Skippy. Regardless of where you live, you still have to get from the beach to wherever your apartment is. That means you'll either be in a plane or on a bus or in a car or a restaurant or other places where people are forced to congregate before you get home. And you're currently in a state that has more senior citizens within a stone's throw than you'll find at a casting call for a remake of Cocoon. I mean, why? Oh, why? Are you all so irresponsible and inconsiderate about the rest of society around you? One reason, and one reason only. You're all idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0553. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0553. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.